put in place a new strategy and start fixing the problems on the delivery end. The role of the agency in managing the Universal Service and Access Fund has historically not been aligned to the mandate of the organization. USAFSA, known as the USA, the Universal Service Agency in the past, focused on telecenters, and the new strategy goes beyond telecenters. Telecenters is an important aspect of universal service and access, but we felt that the strategy needed to be broader, to look at schools, to look at the needy, and the needy groups of our population and the disabled. The programs of USAFSA also lacked sustainability. So you would find off the hundreds of telecenters and cyber labs that were rolled out in schools, there were many problems. If a computer freezes, you need to have a responsive repair and maintenance of program in place, and that wasn't there. So, and also the achievements were never measured, so we didn't have a sense of how many youth were using the computers in the school, how many members of the public were visiting the telecenter, and what impact was it having on their lives. So, and I think a big part of that problem was that USAFSA was working in isolation. We did not have proper stakeholder participation. We did not consult with the relevant decision makers and role players in the community, all the way from local government to provincial government to national. There's honorable members here, and we thank you very much. Honorable Chair, we've had members of this committee who played a very important role in helping us identify the problems, in especially in their constituencies, and we do welcome their participation. I think we're already working on rolling out programs in certain constituencies, and it's really nice to have feedback and oversight from some honorable members, and we thank you for that. Going into the business review for the Universal Service and Access Agency, in terms of the law, we have two budgets, and we have to report on two entities. So we report on USAFSA, and then we also report on the Universal Service and Access Fund. They're two separate budgets, and the USAFSA budget comes from the DOC budget vote. That's our operational budget. We're happy that Sibongile is here from the DOC. So you can take back our funding challenges and other issues. But the Universal Service and Access Fund money comes from the contributions from the operators. Presently, it's the telecoms operators. And now with the EC Act, it has to be, those contributions have to also come from broadcasters. 0.2% of their revenues get paid to ICASA, which gets paid to National Treasury. And that money is supposed to be paid into the Universal Service and Access Fund. So the USAF money comes from the fund. So as I said, the year under review, the main focus was the stability in the organization, sorting out our human resource, the insecurity issues among staff, bringing in a new CEO, bringing in top management, putting in place a proper strategy and translating those that strategy into operational strategies so we can have a project strategy, human resources strategy, a financial strategy, corporate affairs strategy. So all those plans have now been put into place, and it's actually brought a lot more focus and direction in the work that the organization does. The needed skills and capacity is very critical. In the past, the organization has never managed to attract the level of skills and expertise that you see with us here today from USAFSA. It's the first time in 10 years that we have such senior people with the level of skills and experience that they bring. So, and I think part of that was the issue around salaries, also just the reputation of the organization. If you have a bad reputation, you cannot attract good people, unfortunately. So it's a bit of a catch-22. But we're glad that we've turned the corner and we're starting to attract good people. We've also worked very hard in the financial year to audit every single USAFSA project. Every single telecenter was visited and audited, every single cyber lab. So we know exactly what is working and what is not working. And Winile Lamani and his team have been working night and day. If you see his red eyes, it's not because he has a drinking problem or a bulky person. It's because he has an average of 2 hours sleep a night. He speaks. If we email each other at 3 a.m., then I know Winile is awake because he's working. They are working really, really hard to fix those problems, and there's a very tight plan by the end of the financial year to actually go back and rehabilitate every single project and put in plans, stakeholder ownership, sustainability models together with local government, with other partners that we're working on with, like GCIF, on the Tucson Centers, with NGOs and with community-based organizations to ensure that the sustainability is solid going forward. The CEO will talk to you about the reports that have been prepared in addition to this presentation. One of them is a report on the audit findings and the plans going forward. We have a report on the universal, on the USL, we'll talk about it now. And we also have a list, a report on the contact details of every single access center out there, telecenters and cyberlabs. Talking about the USLs, we were supposed to subsidize 40 new users in the last financial year. Unfortunately, that was not achieved because ICASA did not issue those licenses. Of the existing seven users, we subsidized six of them for a total of 5.95 million. And that was on the basis of an agreement that ICASA has with the users, that we would subsidize them for 15 million in three tranches, 5 million per tranche, and they would when they get their license, they get the first tranche, they all receive the first tranche. The second tranche would be on the basis of submitting audited financial statements showing that they spent the money on infrastructure development. Honorable members would know that the process has been very problematic. There were a lot of challenges, and we had a study, the committee had a study tour and dealt with the issue. We had meetings with all the users. We've taken it forward together with the DOC, ICASA, and other partners like the Development Bank and the IDC to try to come up with a clear program going forward for the users that would ensure the sustainability. And much success has been achieved to date. But I'll leave all the good news for the CEO to brief you about. I'm only focusing on the bad news from the previous year. With deploying projects from the access subsidies from the fund, those are the telecentres at the MPCCs, which are now called Tucson Centres, and we also have telecentres in containers. We established 14 new telecentres during the year. The target was 26, were not complete, because of the negotiation issues with the relevant municipalities, which doesn't mean that it would not happen. It probably just took a little longer. These processes of consultation do take a bit of time. 139 of these telecentres were maintained, and USANSA pays for the maintenance of the equipment and the connectivity fees for these telecentres, so all the broadband connectivity fees. To date, we have 154 telecentres, and we knew that honourable members would be asking us how many in my province. So we have broken it down per province. Honourable Chairperson, you would note that we have 19 telecentres in Gauteng. You'd be happy. In Mpumalanga, we have 15. In Limpopo, we have 31. Northwest, 18. In Free State, 11. 9 in the Northern Cape, 18 in the Eastern Cape, 10 in the Western Cape, and 23 in KwaZulu-Natal. And the report that the CEO will distribute will give you details of where those telecentres are and all the contact details, their websites, email addresses, etc. This is a picture of a telecentre in Tembisa. This is the telecentre manager who is paid for by, as part of the MPCC, by the municipality. And they run computer training courses in this telecentre. So service. This is one of the students who has free access to this site, so he can spend all his time there if he has it. If he doesn't have a part-time job, he can be studying here, and then he can go write his exam through Damlin or wherever he's registered. The telecentre manager helps him to make sure that he chooses the right course for him. This is the whole centre, the whole room is about 20 computers, all with internet connectivity, broadband. And these are the learners training for their computer exams and whatever other exams they're writing. This is a picture of a telecontainer, a telecentre container. It is a mobile telecentre. And inside, you would have facilities such as photocopying, faxing, printing, as well as telephones. On the right, you can't, behind the burger bar, there's a little phone shop, which can also be outsourced to an entrepreneur or run by the telecentre, part of the financial sustainability. And then these are the internet facilities. You'd have about 15 new computers with broadband connectivity. This is all in the container. So the container looks small on the outside, but it's actually quite spacious. It's very big. It's as long as a classroom in most cases. This is a picture of the ICT Telecenter for the Disabled also in Tembisa. And these will have special facilities like ramps for wheelchairs. The keyboards have braille. The buttons, the numbers would be bigger for the visually impaired. There'll be a whole lot of there'll be a lot of special equipment inside the skeleton center. Next to it, because it's become an ICT center in the area, you also had a cell phone shop and a Vodacom phone shop, so it becomes a center where people come. This is the manager for the telecenter for the disabled, and this telecenter is managed in partnership with the disabled people's organization in Tembisa. So they own it and control it and manage it, and we help with the maintenance and the repairs and the subsidies. On the cyber lab, we have maintained in this financial year 275 cyber labs, and the target of 20 new cyber labs was not achieved because of financial constraints. The provincial breakdowns, where are these computer centers in the schools? We have 40 in KwaZulu-Natal, 2 in Gauteng province, 36 in Mpumalanga, 36 in Limpopo, 29 in Northwest, 17 in the Free State, 23 in Northern Cape, 43 in the Eastern Cape, and 8 in the Western Cape. So you can see the needs, the rollout is according to the needs of the province. This is a picture of a cyber lab. That he started to put in about 4 years ago, and is now this has been part of the audit to go to every single cyber lab. When we visited this site, for example, of the 30 computers, 10 were not working, and the teacher did not have. It could be that it was just hung, or there was a simple virus, or. It could have been a simple fault, it could have been a hardware crash, but the teacher was not able to identify it. So we're also now starting to implement simple training courses for troubleshooting as part of the sustainability plan. So now we understand that we have details on what's not working where, and we have a plan to fix it. We've already started that. Another view of the cyber lab. One of the learners. This is Zingisa Zaidume, our board member, visiting the cyber lab as oversight from the board. in some areas where there are no fixed line connectivity, we have to use satellite. It's a bit more expensive. But we have to use a whole range of technology connectivity solutions. And we put those out to tender to all the operators and choose the most effective and cost-effective solution. The digital hubs are super telesensitive, if I may call them that. And they have a lot more facilities such as video conferencing, television, recording equipment. They also have facilities and in some places programs to refurbish old computers using people from the community giving them the skills to refurbish computers and then to distribute those computers to schools and community centers around the digital hub. We have 3 digital hubs. We had planned to roll out another 3, but that was not successful because of border disputes impacted on the negotiations of the ownership with the municipalities. I'll skip through some of the smaller parts of our program, such as multimedia upgrades, the e-readiness program. ISASA has done training, has given individual bursaries and scholarships. We've connected emails to telecenters. Internet connectivity was connected to the fund. Community websites were rolled out. I've spoken already about the audit findings, but this is a slide just to give you some more detail on what were the problems that we've identified in the audit, in the community access centers, which are your telecenters and your cyber labs. The services that require rehabilitation are listed. Training has been identified as a need, and wood training is accreditation, part of the national qualification framework. It makes sense for training to be accredited so people can have lifelong learning building blocks. Business and ICT skills training is critical. As I said, I mentioned earlier on, if a computer hangs, how do you empower the telecenter manager to identify what is the problem and simple troubleshooting steps? Strong partnerships with municipalities is critical going forward, but it's also problematic. You find that the sustainability rates of the telecenters that are managed by entrepreneurs, obviously, is much smoother and much more successful because it's one person making business decisions. It's owned by a municipality, often takes a lot longer, and there's sometimes power struggles and individual personality conflicts within the community that destabilize the management of the telecenter. Schools, all the computers that were refurbished, the recycled computers, need to be replaced. They have a very short lifespan. We are debating within USANSA whether we should actually use recycled computers. It's a lot more time-consuming, it's a lot more problematic. It has a shorter lifespan, and you need a lot more skills it requires a lot more maintenance and servicing and repairing. And nowadays, with the kind of prices that we have with computers, it's not that much more cost-effective than new computers. And also, there's arguments about South Africa and other countries in the continent being used as dumping grounds for recycled computers, because recycling dead computers is a big environmental problem. Those are also issues that we need to research and debate a lot more. On the financial performance, since 2001, the agency, ISASA, and the USAF have received clean audits or unqualified opinions from the Auditor General, and there were no matters of emphasis during the same period. Our expenditure for ISASA, with revenues of 20.2 million, we spent 2.5 on administrative expenses, 9 on staff costs, half a million on marketing, 356 on audit fees, 5.9 on operating expenses, and capital of 2 million, giving us a total expenditure of 20.5 million for universal service and access. agency. This is an interesting slide. This is a historical record of all the money that was collected by the revenue funds for the Universal Service and Access Fund. These are all the contributions that were made by the operators from 1999. And so in the first column you have the years, the second column you have the contributions in total that were made by operators to the USAF. And the third column you have what was appropriated to the Universal Service and Access Fund by Treasury. In the last financial year, you would see that this industry contributed 151.9, almost 152 million rand that was destined for the Universal Service and Access Fund. And USASA managed to only get 31 into the fund to spend. There's two main reasons for this. The first reason, and I think all our management and the board would be the first to recognize that the organization itself, because of the destabilization during the financial year, did not have a proper strategy and proper business plan to show Treasury that we knew how to spend the money, that we had a plan and we were able to account and spend the money properly. Going forward, it continues to be a challenge. The CEO will elaborate. We have now have plans. We now have skills. We now have proper strategy, business plan. And there does not need to be any reason why we should not be able to access that, those funding. In a stakeholder engagement with Treasury, we did ask them, where's the rest of the money? Are you keeping it for us? And they said, yes, we are keeping it for you. When you're ready to spend it, we will give it to you. So we will hold Treasury to account. And we would also like the support of this committee to help us to address whatever challenges that lie, that are there to access the funding. If the money does not come back into the Universal Service Fund, it means that there's an unfair tax on operators in this industry. So the operators will not be happy to support USASA or the Universal Service Fund. Now we're also having to extend these contributions to broadcasters, and broadcasters want to know, why must we pay to the USAF? It's just going into Treasury and nothing's happening. It's not coming into the industry. Rather, let's give our money to the MBDA because we can give it to them directly. Why must we give it to the USAF? So we're not going to have convergence. You'll always have the separation between broadcasters and telecoms. But also, it's unfair then on the telecommunications operators. It's a tax that no other industry has. And this money needs to come back into the industry for it to help to make a difference, both to the people that we're supposed to be serving, but also to the operators themselves. On the financial performance for the Universal Service Fund, we had a revenue appropriation of 31 million, appropriation by the DOC of 2 million, and interest earned in total. The revenue appropriation from the DOC is 31. Interest earned is 2 million. Apologies for the mistake on the slide. And so the total revenue is 33 million. From a total contribution of 151. And we spent 32 million of 33 million in the last financial year. A breakdown of how the fund's money was spent. 9.3 million was spent in communities, community access centers, maintenance and connectivity, and capacity building. 10.27 million was spent on schools, the cyber lab maintenance and connectivity, and 5.9 million was given in form of subsidies to the Universal Service and Access License. So just one word to wrap up. From the strategy point of view, the organization has come from a long history of being a telecentre organization, going into the end of its existence with the end of the Telecommunications Act. And it's risen from the ashes, like a phoenix, I think. It's very dramatic in it. But it has been a baptism of fire, Honorable Chairperson. I think we're rising now, and I'm going to hand over to our new CEO, who will give you a sense of the quality of the management that we now have in place, and the handle that they have on implementing our strategy going forward.
Thank you. Are we doing okay on time? Okay, I will also try to be as brief as possible. The idea was that we provide this presentation earlier so that it provides members with time to go through and then we can focus more on questions. The chair mentioned that we also, in the pack, we have a printed report on the audit that was done on the project. We also have a report on users, and then we have also put together contact details of all the telecenter managers, fiberless and all that. We thought it might be a good collection. Chair, I think what I will briefly go through is just to take off from the chair indication around the agency, how we plan to reposition the agency within the broader government program on ICT, and in particular around universal service and access. We took some time with this strategy. We deliberated upon it internally with the board. We took it to the shareholder. We had discussions with the contributors, the operators. We had a discussion with other government departments. The idea was to really understand the environment, but also the issues that have been dealt with in the past around universal service and access. Agency. It's now 10 years and it definitely calls for a review of what is the future of this agency and also the government, what are we saying about the access gap in this country going forward. So we located this strategic framework around the program of ABGISA and the ICT plan of government, with more focus on how do we accelerate service delivery on universal service and access to ICTs, and also recognizing that as a country we also have other obligations internationally on universal service and access. So the issues of how do you define universal service and access, for example, should not compromise issues around burdening the operators, but also becoming uncompetitive in the sector. So we take those things into account as well. In the strategy, the immediate thing for us is getting a definition sorted out, because if you recall from 1996 when the agency was established, it was supposed to provide the country recommendations to the minister on what is in the service and access, and also who are the needy, what kind of schemes we need to take to facilitate the universal service and access. And at that time there was this assumption that universal service and access relates to voice, access to voice, and therefore if you have a phone in the house, that should be defined as access to universal service. But clearly, things have changed. There have been a number of developments, and therefore we need to provide a more appropriate definition of what is universal service in the light of data in the light of broadband and also the issues of cost in this country. So that is one of the things that we'll be focusing on to finalize recommendations to the minister on what is in the service act, and therefore define the issues of the need and the schemes that we should come up with. That engagement will involve stakeholders. In terms of the act, we need to have a public participation. We are commissioning a study internally to review the work that has been done in the Strategic Atlas, the ICT penetration, and definitions that were done by other stakeholders. And then a review that will then lead to recommendations that will need to be presented to the public through a hearing, consultative process. And then after that, we'll then take a consolidated report and submit recommendations to the minister. In the strategy, we see a need to play, to work with other stakeholders. Clearly, there are a number of stakeholders in this strategy. You have government, you have NGOs, you have users, you have other SOEs, Centec, post office, you have operators who have also obligations that they need to roll out with regards to the test of the center. So clearly, there will have to be some kind of stakeholder model that is smart and also focused so that there's no fragmentation and there's a clear cohesion in terms of who's in what in the transition matter. Our role is not to repeat what other people are doing, but to focus on what we can do best as the agency. And we see that in coordinating all the initiatives on investor service, but also in making sure that we become a center and champion of investor service and access, and we are able to collate information around access gaps in this country. And then that will enable us to monitor and evaluate progress that we are making as a country on investor service and access. So the issue of having a quota within the agency becomes critical for us. But then if we are able to have that quota that is updated and provides accurate information on where are the gaps and how far are we think that would be critical for especially government, but also the industry.
Thank you.
I think the act is very clear as to what should the agency be focusing on. I mentioned that in the past 10 years, you had the stop and go around this agency. It was supposed to be there for 5 years, and then it was renewed again, given another 5 years. But the ECA, I think, went further to concretize the existence of the agency, but also broaden the scope around the convergence framework to say the agency is important, dealing on issues around broadcasting. We still have to talk about our role in postal, because that's one of the areas that we think universal service and access issues need to be looked at very seriously. I think our objectives, as I mentioned earlier, they flow from the Act. The Act stipulates very clearly what is the mandate of this agency. And as the agency in the strategy, we set out our objectives to say definitely we want to become a center and champion of universal access. We need to ensure that we reach all South Africans who are not part of the infrastructure network of the country, and we make sure that those who are already in the network are also preserved, because that's the problem we have, that people who are in the network, they also get offloaded during the process, because of cost and in our process. The issue of funds, the chair mentioned the financial issues around the funds, and we are having discussions with other stakeholders, especially traders, to unlock the funding, because if we're serious about closing the universal service access gap in the country, definitely it will require appropriate resourcing in terms of skill in the agency, but also the funding that comes out of the contribution will have to be directed to the industry and through the fund, to the project of the fund. So we think that we the strategy that we have around restructuring the fund, which will entail participation of the industry, so that they have confidence in the process of how decisions are taken on funding of projects, then that will at least make them feel that they are part of the process, and also they can get the sense of what happens to the money that they contribute. I mentioned the issue of research, because that's one of the key areas for the agency. Agency is in a way one part financial service company through the fund, but also becomes a research organization that needs to provide the country with recommendations on the definitions, on the schemes that need to be undertaken to facilitate universal service access. We have already commissioned, as I said, a tender to review all the obligations of the license holders as they convert into the ECA framework. Our view is that the previous obligations that were attached to licensees were not as effective as they should be, and therefore the fine operators who I think they were given very loose timelines, and the obligations were not as strict as they should be to address the Universal Service Act of Death that we have in the schools and also in our community. So we are going to be reviewing that and working with ICASA, making recommendations on how we strengthen the regulatory of the regime on obligations attached to the license holders. But also we have a tender to get service providers to assist us to come up with a definition of what is universal service access, and therefore come with recommendations to the community. That will help us to talk about how do we evaluate universal service access in this country, and how do we monitor it, and therefore begin to set targets to say by maybe the next 25 years we need to be moving towards a particular direction around universal service. These are the priorities I mentioned about the tender and the need to ensure that we have a central information through a web portal that will have updated, accurate information about the universal service, so that any other person can access information on where are we in South Africa on life. We are also hoping that we will have a dialogue at the country at some point next year where we bring together all stakeholders and talk about ICT, universal service and access to ICT, especially the contributors, operators, government, and other people from other countries, so that we share, because other countries are also going through the process of setting up the funds, agencies, and then how we network with to share ideas and best practices. Internally, the agency also needs to get itself to ensure that we are able to execute the money. There have been issues around skills, how to ensure that we bring necessary skills, we reskill some of our staff, also are able to retain the skill base. You have a situation where in some cases you compete with the government departments who require ICT skills, but also the operators also would also take people from the agency who have been there for some time. So there's always that challenge to say how do you retain skilled people, but also attract some people from both the policy environment and also from the industry regulatory environment. We very clearly, there are challenges around even just the image of this agency. I mean, the name is just mouthful. You struggle to finish the name of this agency. But that will lead to the necessary processes. We won't change the name now. But here is the brand. We are of the view that we need to relook at the brand. We have already started with the stakeholder consultation, and we see how we keep on reviewing the brand of this agency so that it ties in with our strategy going forward. And clearly, as I mentioned, there are a number of stakeholders that are immediate that we are going to be working with. Already we have held meetings with some of them. Telcom, Femtech, all them, with GCIS, we are working together on the Shusong Center. We have discussions with MGCA on how we work together on broadcasting. We already have a joint project, and we are going to have a memorandum of understanding so that we work together on broadcasting issues. I think a lot has been said about the history on our funding and how we have been managing the funds, the audit report is unqualified. We however, have challenges to ensure that we improve on what we have in finance, issues of supply chain management, risk management, turnaround, chain service providers, especially the SMEs. Also accounting for all assets through our asset register. So those are things that we're looking at to ensure that we improve our financial management.
Okay.
Okay, Chair. I will also On use of funds, I want to call. I think that we've said a lot on the use of funds. These are a number of things that we are going to be doing on the use of funds. It's really issues of management information system so that all our projects are connected, but also accelerate training and development on activity. Promote the issue of through the fund. These are the targets that we have set ourselves, and we will be monitored and scrutinized in the basis of this. Our first coming back again next year to provide more information prior to the budget so that there's an alignment with the budget process. The rehabilitation program that the chair mentioned is ongoing. We are intending to finalize the rehabilitation of 30 federal centers by the end of next month. And this is a breakdown of which provinces we will go into. This is more information on, just to give you more details on the federal centers, how much it costs, what is in the federal center. You can see how much we spend per telecenter. Hence the issues of sustainability, governance, working together with the parties are very critical to make sure that the very command is very kind of issue. I think it's more detailed as well. What is the cyber layer, what is included, how much are the cost and all that, and the final date of our rehabilitation. This is more detailed as well, so I think members can go through. just more detailed information on the prevalence. Oh, this is what the yes, we have this. Yes, that's part of the plan. It's also part of the plan.
Let's stop there.
Yes, there is that.
Okay. We can have a look at another question. Thank you very much. And this is open for questions. Good morning, everybody. Are you awake?
So before question, the chairperson indicated that there are board members here, but she did not go to them unless if when I was outside. But I would have been quite happy to hear them or just for them to tell us what they've got. We normally have a lot of guests here every day, so we're not so sure with the guests is a board member. Yes, yes. So before I go to the next question, thank you.
Apologies, Honourable Member. Let me introduce our board members. Starting on the left is Zingisa Mzaidume. Next to her is a newly appointed board. Zingisa is newly appointed 3 months ago. Another newly appointed board member is Professor Maredi Mpashlene, the Professor of Computer Science at TUT. Here in the front row, next to Honourable Member Dean, we have Becky Majera. He's one of our longest standing board members. And next to him is Andy Mooke. And yes, those are the 4 board members. And if I can quickly introduce the management. Oh yes, one board member is not here, Berenice Francis. We've got Peter Makaneta, who's newly appointed head of internal audit. We poached him from CARS. Next is Leon Lorenz. We poached him from Telcom. He's newly appointed head of telecommunications. He's one of these engineering types. Next to him is Phineas Mulele, who's head of regulatory. We poached him from ICASA. Next to him is Kosi. What's Kosi's name? Next to him is Kosi Mashlangu, and she is a stalwart in the agency. She's one of, she deals very strongly with overseeing all the provincial rollout plans. Right at the back is Daniel Ramathan. You know him, Honourable Members. He is born and bred in the Western Cape and he's in Parliament all the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, it helps because some of the people, they used to come on other guests like the Casa guy there and other people, so that's why I thought it was important for us to say. Chairperson, yeah, Chairperson, how to go to the issue of the special investigations in progress, it could be there. There's a legal opinion still outstanding on a matter relating to Ethiopia recovering the relocation cost of 150,000 paid to a senior manager. I think it's a matter that I would want to expect part of the people to deal with that. The other 2 questions, Chairperson, the first one is on page 15 to 21 of the report. It relates to the key performance targets. I don't want to check why is it that most of them have not been met, as it is quite clear that whether is it in relation to constraints of finance or no funding or stuff like that, but it looks like if you check in the key PAs then, they have not been met, and I'm not so sure what is the problem, why has not they been met. Now, Chairperson, if you also go to page 11 in terms of capacity issues, it says that the USASA, in terms of additional resources that are expected from USASA, it is quite difficult for institutions to keep pace with the development within the, in terms of the Electronic Communication Act. I'm not so sure what specific resources do we want to assist you to be able to either implement or be able to move along the ECA Act. Those are the 2 questions, Chairperson, I thought I should ask. I'm sure I'll follow the others. Thank you very much. And then, Chairperson, sorry, lastly, we went to Limpopo. Kosi was one of the two that we went, even the, I don't know, the ICASA, or it was not there, Kosi Makangu and them. We realized that some of the center centers, Chairperson, they are quite different. I'm not so sure if there's been an assessment, because you find a worst case scenario of a center, then you've got another one that's well equipped, and I would not know what what standards and measures applied there? Because in some cases, some of them were outsourced, you know, and then the people were taking the money in terms of the services they were providing. So I couldn't understand why they were quite different. The telecenter and the record of the MPCC in some instances, they overlapping. And we actually thought that we would want to check why there's such a problem when the telecenters are different. And lastly, Sir President, it could be that the ISASA operates in the context of looking at African communities, but quite often there's a negligent point of not establishing the telecenters in the colored Indian and even white communities, especially pro-white communities. I'll tell you, it would be much appropriate to have a telecenter in Chatsworth in Devon because of the population in Lenasia and Horner Park anywhere else. But I think the tendency is to assume that by the fact that the universal service areas might mean far outlying rural areas. And in some cases, we might miss areas that are quite highly populated and which are not catered for. You know, that's the danger as we try to look in terms of the context of saying blacks in general and Africans in particular, but we've been too particular in the sense that we might neglect other communities. Thanks, Dr. President.
Just following up to what Mr. Domala said, it's true. What you basically need is a template. So when you walk into a tele center, you can say you measure the tele center against the template. We unfortunately don't have a template. I understand challenges could be different, but you need to have something that you can measure against. So then I think USASA needs all the support. They've been dogged by, I don't want to say controversy, but a huge exodus of skills, and that's contributing to this no continuity of things. The first, and I think that led to funds, I don't want to say held back, but if you understand from the first year onwards, there was a huge continuous turnover, rollover of funds, and that's all of that. You cannot come back this year and say, now you stabilize, give us all the funds that we get. You'll have to work up to that point where people have the confidence again. And it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be soon. But you have to hang in there. I think good for you in terms of posting. It's about time that you do get them back. But ideally, everybody says, but ideally, USASA, maybe a new brand name would help, is to try and make USASA the preferred employer. So everybody needs to be there. It's not going to be easy. It's highly competitive and industry environment you work in. In terms of your extra responsibility, in terms of oversight, a broadcasting particularly, if you take the post office and you compare postal agents to post office, I mean, it's a night difference between them, where I think it should be the other way around, where the people would need the services most. And that's your rural, your poor, and previously disadvantaged. The services are non-existent. If you postal agencies and all they do is sell stamps to post and deliver, and if you take the city, take the one here in Parliament, it has all facilities, including competing with your traditional CNAs and all of that. That doesn't make sense because you have all these kind of opportunities and facilities at every corner of the street. So I'm just saying, you know, where they are located, postal agents and the services they provide, they don't even copy and certify, nothing of that. It costs you like 200 grand just to go and get it certified from where you stay on a farm in a poor area to get to a post office because you can't even go. That in itself generates a skew grunt because people will miss the postal agencies because they don't have any services. It could lead to a closure of that because there's no services, so people skip it where there's a growth, and then people just close it down, go to that one, those kind of things. And then some classes here in terms of broadcasting, your plan to make sure that all people, if not all, most more people in a faster rate, are able to access more broadcasting services. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The CEO just told us that one of the reasons you were unable to use the the funds allocated in that year, they didn't have a good plan. Now, what I want to know is the plan that you have now, the plan that you are saying you are sure that you'll be able to use the funds as expected, is a working one. Well, how different it is from the previous plans, because the problem that we've been facing, we know that the CASA has a number of problems for various reasons, but when they come, there are always promises that the next year is going to be different, we'll be able to do it. And then they come again and say that now there's another problem. Now, I want you to tell us how different this plan from the previous one, and how sure are you that it's going to work? And the gentleman next to you talked about the portal that you're going to show you the pointers where the weaknesses are. I want to know more about it. How are you going to identify these weaknesses? The method that you are going to use, how different from the method that you're using before to identify the weaknesses? And then what? What, when you discover these weaknesses, what? Are you going to come back here and say we have discovered the weaknesses, or you've got your mechanism in place that are going to assist you to intervene immediately when you come up, I mean when you identify the problem? So how is it going to work? Because we need a plan that is going to tell us when you come back and say this is what we have identified in the process of working in the previous year, and this is what we have done, instead of coming every year to be told that this has been the problem and now we're going to we have come up with a new plan, something that you will be able to do and intervene on the spot. See, so that's the kind of problem. And also your I know that it's, I mean, to criticize yourself, including myself, it's not a criticism, it's not chocolate, you can't enjoy doing it. But I would have loved if you have told us more about the weaknesses and how are you going to, you know, in all of these areas of work, you know, telecenters, as my colleague has said, we know the problems in those telecenters. But your slides are just, you're showing us of the good ones. We are more interested in those that have weaknesses, and how are you going to ensure that those weaknesses are not repeating itself? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman. First of all, I'd like to thank the report and this detailed reporting of the Pipeline Telecentre. I will have a question on Pipeline. If Fabul could tell me how this really, I'm shocked. There's a school which I can throw a zone my father's house to it. All I know is that the government promises for future for the good. The community can come to learn competency if they want to, but they must contribute something towards the repair of the wisdom of the school. And nobody's ever been. Is this project working?
Chairperson, honorable members. Most of the questions are operational, so we will get the senior management to respond. I will address the relocation allowance issue. On the issue of non-delivery and capacity issues in the annual report, the CEO will talk about. Winile will address the issue of the telecenters in the Mpopo. Why are some good and some bad? Why are they different? Winile will also talk about the where are the telecenters? Are they only in rural areas or in urban, highly populated areas? And the race issues in the communities. CEO will deal with Honorable Randy's issues around postal and broadcasting, and also Honorable Lunka about what's different now in the plan, how will it work, and what are the resources in the telecentrum. And Winita will also address the question of the cyber lab in the Honorable Member's community that is not being used, and there's no teacher. And James will speak about the user. What's happening now? I think I've covered all those questions. But on the relocation allowance, it was 6 months in discussion amongst the board and the senior managers before I came on board. There were two legal opinions, which cost more than $150,000, to investigate the $150,000 relocation allowance. So with all the management time and all the board time and the audit committee meetings on this issue, I thought it was a use of waste money. The person had been dismissed for financial mismanagement. The senior managers who made the decisions had all gone. It didn't seem fair to sue those managers who didn't actually benefit from the $150,000 relocation. And the legal opinion told us that because the senior manager had a contract that says she could get the money and it's signed off by the CFO and the CEO and Sam, that she has a strong case to win in court. The board took a decision that we were throwing good money after bad, we should just write it off. And that's what she did. And I'll hand over to the CEO now to some of the other.
Thanks. Yes, I think the question was on the, if you look at the pages that the member was referring to, like from 15 or so, on the annual report, there were areas where we said not achieved. And we tried as well to provide the explanation as to why some of these things were not achieved. But broadly, there were a number of issues. I mean, if you take, for example, the users, we couldn't give money to users who are not licensed. So we rely on the ICASA to license more users. But also, we also talk to availability of funding from treasury to us in the fund, so that we are able to give funding to the new users. So we have not received further funding, and other users have not been licensed. But also internally, I think in the annual report, the chairperson's report statement does go into detail around some of the challenges that the agency was facing in the period under review, around management, instability, leadership, but also basically processes, how things were happening in the agency, the turnaround. So there has been a number of challenges, even though indeed there are also achievements that we should also note, where there were service delivery incidences where telecenter, cyber labs were also rolled out. So I'll broadly leave it at that to say, and link it with a question around what is in this new plan and why do we think it will work. Clearly, we we have a new sense that in terms of the act, the agency is now established permanently. That's the first thing. It was never a permanent agent in the past, and I think to some extent that talks to the instability in the agency in the past 10 years, where employees were there for a limited time period. They were not sure of what was going to happen with their contract, what's going to happen with the future of the agency. So, but for the first time in the ECA, we now have clarity around the permanency of the agency. That's to the agency. And two, I think we suddenly have a new approach to the from the shareholder, who would say, you know, we need to strengthen the board, and we have skilled people, different skills in the board that helps in the oversight of the agency, giving direction as to what we should be working on. In the management team, we have new skilled people, and some of the of managers who have been there in the agency have also been integrated and given responsibilities. We have performance agreements signed to ensure that we can monitor and performance and poor performance. So at the structural level, those are the changes that we are introducing to ensure that we have a good team that is able to put together the strategy and which becomes really a better plan to deal with the acts of gaps in the country. We are confident that it will work. We have support. We have consulted other stakeholders, and we have a buy-in. We are aware that this is not a one-man show. It will require the industry. This is a regulated business. There are obligations from ICASA to the regulator. There is a policy plan from government that focuses on investor service and assets. There's an act of parliament that prioritizes investor service and assets. So that provides us with the pillars to say that this strategy should focus on the key things that stakeholders are looking at from this agency. So we are sure that the weekly challenges, the honorable member is correct. We can't keep coming here saying there were problems. Funding, people left, that can't be. So our focus will be on implementation, executing the plan so that there is greater service delivery on investor service and assets to ICTs, and we will have more monitoring and evaluation of whether we are in the right direction or not. The issue of broadcasting and posters clearly is now in the new mandate for the agency. We mentioned that we are already working with MDDA and other stakeholders like SABC. We will be focusing on those areas that have serious access gaps. You have areas where you don't have access to TV channels, or you don't have access to radio, for example. So those are the priority to us, to say how do we then work together with MDDA, with DOC, to ensure that we reach those South Africans who are in the deep rural areas and they don't have access to broadcasting facilities, especially in the light of the preparations for the 2010 and all that, so that by 2010 at least all South Africans are able to access TV, radio signal, and no one gets out. So we will be working on that. We will also be working with the post office, because indeed post office has the deepest penetration when it comes to rural infrastructure. And with our program around connectivity, providing access to internet and other ICT services, it's natural that we have to work with the postal office. Just to maybe wrap up on two things around the portal. Yes, indeed, there was a study done by the agency around ICT penetration, which identified gaps that are existing. but you would remember that that was linked to a definition of what is investors as an asset, and at that time people were focusing more on voice, fixed line penetration. Now with our program, the project of redefining investor service and assets, that will then enable us to identify and recommend to ICASA areas that should be declared as underserviced areas. And then we will then have to focus on those gaps and make sure that they are linked to the obligations of the operators in their license. Just in the last, I think Winnie will deal with the telephone card, cyber lab. On the users, we have some of the users here. It's not true that they are all out of business. We are working with users. There are challenges on users. There are success stories. This year, we will have 3 users going live with their infrastructure network. In the report, we have compiled a detailed report on each user as where are we with each user, and that's where we also indicate the users that will be going live this financial year. We are working together with ICASA and DOC to look at the minister's directive to consolidate the licenses and form USANOS, and that's the program we're working on.
On telecenters, when the program on telecenters began in the organization, there were some brief research to look internationally what models of telecenters are out there. There were different models that were started to be implemented. One of them was the entrepreneurship model, where an entrepreneur in that community would apply for a telecenter, and the agent would set up that telecenter. The second approach was the non-profit organization, where a group of people in the community would group themselves together, register as an NGO, then they would run a telecenter. So that's one of the differences we will pick up when we go out to the telecenters in the provinces. We find that the ones that are run by individuals or entrepreneurs, they are the ones that are mostly running on a day-to-day basis. The ones that are run by the community organizations, the NPO, most of the time you find that there's a management issue, there's also the operational issue. One of the reasons is that when people come together in those communities, some of them have got high expectations that we will make a lot of money out of this project. When they realize there's not a lot of money involved, then some of them withdraw. You end up having very few or one person running the show. So somehow it's not meeting the community participation. However, one of the weaknesses that we have identified in those previous approaches was, one, when we allocate this project to this entrepreneur, we never had tight contracts to say the proceeds out of this project, how are you going to reinvest them into the community? Those are the areas we have identified as part of our audit to say, going forward in the new rehabilitated model, these are the areas we're going to tighten. In some areas, we find that the entrepreneurs are charging very huge amounts for a photocopy or for a CV. Those are the areas we're revisiting in the new, in the new rehabilitation process. And also on the design of the telecenter. Ideally, what should be in the telecenter should be informed by the demands of that community. However, previously we had a standard model of a telecenter to put 10 computers, a photocopy machine, a scanner, and a search machine. You find that in some communities, they don't really need 10 computers. They probably need about 5 computers, depending on the size of the community and the awareness that the community has. Part of our program going forward, we want to strengthen our awareness program so that people, the more they get aware, the more they will know exactly what do they need in those centers and what should be offered in those centers. It should be different from community to community. Surely it can never be the
understand that approach. Coming on where the report of telecenter, honorable member, it is correct that there was a bias to say we go into those most rural communities and we put the center. Part of our plan right now is to ensure that there is a proper application process. In our program going forward, we're looking at putting a process even on the website and in our provincial offices to say, for anyone who wants to apply for the fund to set up centers like this is the process. You will send an application to this person, then it will be considered. This is the full process. This is how long it will take your application to be successful. And also to put a proper criteria. This is the criteria on that we will look at to be able to put this center. For us, the telecenter program, I think the chairperson mentioned earlier on that we looking at not only focusing on telecenters, but telecenters will only be part of our program. It should be more of your SME development. Hence, we're saying we want a transparent process where all the communities will know how to apply for this fund and how do we set up this telecenter. Coming to the question of the cyberlab, one of the witnesses in our previous approaches was that as the agency, we were going to the school and set up cyberlab as the agency without any strong partnership with the Department of Education. Now, that has resulted in us putting a cyberlab, and you find that even the teachers in that school, they are so scared of using a computer themselves, let alone giving lessons to the learner. The challenge, however, has been we can train the teacher in those schools, but what happens after the teacher has been trained becomes a problem to the school. The teacher now has acquired an extra skill, which is scarce in school. Now, the teacher may require additional salary or the teacher may leave. Now, what we've learned out of this, we said with the rehabilitation process, we want a strong partnership with the Department of Education. We had several meetings with them. We are in the process of signing an MOU to say we will set up a cyber lab with the full equipment as specified by the Department of Education. But the responsibility of the DOE then will be to ensure maintenance and to ensure the proper personnel is placed to ensure that they therefore train teachers to give lessons to the learners. We are open to assist. The Act allows us to pay subsidies for ICT skills training. When it comes to funding, we can assist the school. But in terms of ownership and control of those resources, the teacher, making sure there is a dedicated teacher, then the DOE, together with the school management and the government body, should be able to control that. We are in the process of signing that. In schools, there's different approaches in different communities. In some areas, we find that there's no access center at all. With the understanding of the school management and the community, some of those schools are used as community access centers as well, where people come in and learn to use computers and maybe pay a minimum fee to assist in the maintenance. But we leave that through the school management and the community to arrange. Because in some areas, it's difficult to open the school to the community because of facility issues. So there's different models. In some areas, we find that it's not only USASA that dropped in computers and connected servers. There's been many different donors. That's the approach the CEO was talking about to say, we're trying to position ourselves to be the main coordinators, the champions of this cyberland, so that whoever wants to donate those computers, we make sure that they meet the standards and there will be continuity and sustainability. Thank you.
Just follow up, but also I thought Chairperson, because the Chairperson of the board indicated that the Chairperson, the issue of universal service and access, emanated out of the International Telecommunication Initiative in Asia. of the universal service obligation, and part of that is that the concentration of much more on tele-density. Hence, these institutions are called tele-center, because they are intended to provide voice in communities where there is absence of voice. But now in the past 10 years, there's a paradigm shift from voice to data and to voice video data, video and downstream in terms of video downstreaming and many other things, mainstream electronics. Now, I just want to check the person that if the USASA board in the management have considered a redefinition of the understanding of universal access or service, maybe they must want to tell us how we understand in the current context now. And I'm saying this for a number of reasons, Chair President. Firstly, we want to know what is contained in a telecenter. And if you compare telecenter and a CST, a community service telephone, that is provided by the operators like Vodacom, MTN, and Telus. The mother phones there, and they're intending now to put internet services in their CSTs. The first point is that with the CSTs, there is an incentive for money. People are getting paid to do that. But if the telecenters, I don't think there is an incentive for people to run the telecenter. That's the first point. Secondly, Chairperson, it relates to the fact that once you don't have the other aspects of internet or whatever, those type of areas, now you continue to not voice, there's a tendency now to move away from voice, because most of us now will use an image, will send SMS and multimedia, stuff like that. Voice is quite expensive. And so the type of please call me that you get in a day would be around about 100 to 200. I'm not saying most of us do that thing. Please come because they cannot afford to be a chairperson. Sorry, sir? Now, chairperson, the ICASA licensing regime that was introduced on the 7th of November, 6th of November this year, has made quite a number of conversions of licenses in terms of individual and class. And there is an intention in most of them. Like I said, you see on television now. As you read the news on television, or people are reading the news, there are messages that are moving up and down in terms of SMS. So there's a massive movement of everybody in terms of conversion to go into the industry of the triple play of broadband, in particular voice, in particular data and video. Now I want to check that how serious are we as the USASA to really deal with those issues that are now really quite serious in terms of putting a challenge, a competition. Because it doesn't make sense to put a telecenter where you've got the similar CFCs that with the same type of services offered, but it puts a serious competition. And this is why you're not also paying your people to run those telecenters. So that is the matter that I would want us to look at it separately. The last point, separately. In terms of the strategy, why do we want to put more money on voice? In terms of the strategy of the SASA, more money on voice instead of internet access and service. And I'm sure this will also go along with the e-rate system that we want to introduce for the school. So these are the things that I thought we could look at them. But most important, we must want also, although the last ITU that we attended in last year, there is still a intention to stick to the tele-density. And so we're moving away from that. Now, people are not talking about mobi-density. You could have both a telephone, an IMAGE, an internet, and now once you start to count 100 people, we're going to do double counting in terms of tele-density. So there's this issue of mobi-density where if the one person might have four or five systems to communicate, you find it depending on voice. So there is a movement from voice. The strategy needs to change from voice into that. So that's how to if the USASA could look into that. That's why I'm raising this because there is a continuous insinuation to ask whether there's still relevance of USASA or not. And members who have heard, people who have heard this, you know, whether you must match both USASA and MDTA and blah, 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 whether, you know, those type of things that are making rounds. Of course, we are committed. We want to see them succeeding and want to even pursue and lobby for them to get more money to can achieve their goals, but the strategy needs to change to address the changes that are taking place, rapid changes in the market. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
very much.
I can't tell you for giving me what you said. I can't tell you what you finished. So, I don't know.
Can I also put in a few questions? This name of yours, you know, if I say this name to my wife and my children, they actually won't understand what it says. It is what services access to one. It is nothing. You can walk down the street and shout his name on the loudspeaker, and those people won't know what you're talking about. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. I also want to figure out the question that was raised. I mean, really, should we not, for the future, look at the merging of MDBA and well, I don't know. Private allocation, where some say in how these things are allocated, etc., or are you just doing it yourself? Because I mean, it's unfair that I'm putting money in, and it's now going to a good few million, and you're doing nothing with it. And the question must come up to the third year, which I see 3 years now that you're actually not using up the money. What am I putting that money there for? And I got no say over it. Last question is, I mean, the MDDA model lies from what, from the little bit that I understand, is model on the basis of application. The people who have interesting projects on the ground, they have submitted proposals and they apply, and then those are assessed and evaluated, and then an allocation is made. Do you have such a model? I mean, if your program is just telecenters or cyber labs, that's all that you are doing. But if I have something interesting in some Google place there, and I've got some interesting ideas I want to test out. Can I apply for money? The final question from my side is, if the entrepreneurship model is working, rather than the community governance kind of thing, should we not take a strategic decision and say, look, we're moving towards entrepreneurship, that's what works, and all this thing about community participation and all that, and those are nice, wonderful ideas, I believe in them. But if they're not working, they're not working. And linked to the entrepreneurship, is there some payback on the investment that we put in out there? I mean, is there a way in which at least we can recoup some of the public funds that we put in out there? Or is it just that we're putting something there and some one person or one entrepreneur benefits exclusively with no return to the organization? We're going to take the next deck, this is Mr. Yangeni follow-up and Eric follow-up. Now, you have a new question.
Sure.
Let's take the questions and then we have an answer, then we break for tea for a few minutes.
Thank you.
No, you can come in now, but let's just take that.
Thank you, sir. I'm a bit worried about this new plan of shifting the responsibility to the Department of Education, because we've got an experience of your rate. To date, nobody wants to take the responsibility. The DOC, Department of Education, not happening. Now, if we're saying we're going to repeat the same experience that we've seen, that is not working, I really don't know what we're doing. You will come back here next year and tell us you have done what you have to do and to suffer, but the problem is with the Department of Education. Then what? Seemingly, to me, all these failures that you guys experience in MGCC, in cyber lab, you shift then the responsibility to other people. You want to go halfway and then up to other people, then they must take the responsibility. I'm not happy. I'm really not happy because I'm not sure that it's going to work. That's the comments that I'm making there.
Can we just follow up just a blank?
Can you say, what's the earring? What is the figure? You know, a school needs to plan to say, yes, I want the connectivity. I can afford 50% of what? Can somebody put a figure or calculation for any school, anybody to say, yes, I'm for it? Because everybody talks about the earring, but it's still kind of a mystery drive, and nobody can plan. Can somebody just say to me, this is the earring?
I've got only three questions, but most of them are very easy. The first one, I just want to check in terms of the annual report, page 47, respecting the decision to write off that 150,000. I just want to check whether, does that mean that the decision was taken after the report has not yet in the report? That the 150,000 is written off. I just want to check that because I'm not contesting the writing off, but I just want to check whether that happened after the report was written or it happened before. If it happened before, why is not yet in the report has been put and so on. The second issue, Chair, is that I have tried to go through, although we're pressed because of other activities. I'm not sure whether there is anywhere in the report where it talks about, I think the requirement that disciplinary matters should be reported. I don't see them here. I've not seen them. If they are here, it's my omission, my apology. But if not, one would love to hear about the disciplinary matters, what is happening around misconduct and other things within the agents and so on. The last one, Chair, is the issue of, I'm sure we've covered the other one, Chair, in terms of saying the MDDA and the USAC. We might avoid it, but not avoid them. If they are starting to deal with broadcasting, the cooperation, how do we define that cooperation, the working relation, and so on, I've been saying, I will repeat that, yeah, we need to start to engage around that particular matter. So, as soon as we can, so that we see whether they can get clear separation of what their duties and so on. The issue, Chair, of the detailed report in terms of telecenters and so on, I'm not sure whether these telecontainers, they are not part of that. I'm not sure whether part of the telecenter would mean the telecontainers and so on, because I've not seen some of the telecontainers which I know. That they are in some of the areas that they are not part of that. So just that clarity around that particular matter. Chair, when ICASA was making their presentation, we posed the question of the users whether is there any case for them to survive in this shucks environment, as the chairperson of the council would put it in those words and so on. And I'm sure from what I heard was that seeing there is a case for them to survive, to what extent in the converged environment, can one elaborate to what extent that survival? I understand, Chair, that they implement policy directly from the minister. Given the question of the Kusano, to what extent is going to assist to this entire situation and so on. So that, Chair, from our side also was clear that whether was succeeding. The last one, Chair, a quick one. I think maybe what must happen, Chair, so that they were able to. I understand that there's been a change in management within the board and so on. Maybe what they must do, Chair, part of what I've seen in other committees dealing with the SOEs like SAA. Up front, Chair, there's a separation that these issues which they call legacy issues. Issues which have been there within the agency which they are trying to deal with. It's probably what they want to do.
because clearly that separates the issue, so that even our engagement can separate that is a legacy matter which has been there. We are trying to battle with, but this is what we want to do. If you can do that, I think it will assist us to be able to move more faster, because otherwise we will engage you on what is in some of the things we are not there. So it's a separate legacy matter. They call it legacy matter.
I just wanted to hand out some chocolate. I thought Mr. Ngeni's remarks were one of the clearest things I've ever heard. Criticism is not chocolate, you don't enjoy doing it. And none of us do. But I just thought I would give some chocolate. The new Ustrasa does instill confidence, and I think you've got some way to go. But good luck, and I think we will try to get very involved with the Ustrasa. And the only thing I want to ask is, surely when we did the ETA, it was as part of that process that it was renamed from the USA. Now that doesn't work because it sounds like America. It was renamed from the USA to the South. It's probably Eric. I can't remember something, but Eric is the person.
No, I was dealing with the tech launch, and I'm proud of that.
So could we just hear how do they want us to solve number two, the last one on the accessing ESA funds? Because I know some of the Vodacom gave them 57 million last year, they got 25 million there and there, but they, at the budget, is only 22 million. Now they can't access the money. What is that that they want us to do as Parliament to assist you to access the funds? Thank you.
Quick responses, because we've already got the other team here and the tea and coffee getting cold.
Thank you, Chair. On the definition, I think we definitely don't, we're not talking about voice anymore. Definitely not. The definition of universal service and access now has to start taking into account mobile issues, but also broadcasting. Broadband. If you look around the world, many of the developed countries are starting to define access as access to broadband. Because they have more than 100% tele-density. So it's definitely not based on tele-density and voice anymore. USAFTA's strategic position around these issues is we should now be measuring the issue that South Africa has a problem with, and that's usage and uptake, and the question of the cost and affordability. Because those issues now start to play a more important role. You have service there, we've got infrastructure, we've got mobile coverage around the country, but people still don't have access. Why? Because it's too expensive. They can't afford it. Or they don't know how to use it. So if there's an internet facility, people still don't know how to use it. And some research that the DOC has done shows that South Africa, compared to many other or most other developing countries, spends a lot more money putting in access facilities for the public, but when it comes to the usage and uptake, we are one of the countries that are doing the worst. So it shows that we are giving people facilities that they either don't know how to use, or they don't need, or they don't know how it's going to benefit them. So we are throwing money at the problem without understanding what the real needs are and how we should be packaging it to really make a difference. What do people really want? We need to go out and ask those questions. And that's about usage and uptake and the whole issue of affordability. So the definition and the CEO will probably, maybe not to the fan, but those are the issues that now we, from a strategic perspective, we need to look at in the new definitions of access. On the issue of, I also think the name sucks, Chairperson. Sorry, Honorable B. But maybe when there's an amendment to the Act next year, we can look at it. We need.
USASA is the United Schools Sports Association.
And the USASA is
the United Girls School Kids USASA. It's a sports thing, you may know.
USASA is the United States Air Force.
Can you kill him and give the name? That's the only objective.
The Deputy Minister has some nice ideas around digital, Agency for Digital Inclusion, Agency for Digital Opportunities. So people are now starting to talk about digital opportunities, digital inclusion. Those digital divide days are over. Honorable Committee, we report to the DO, to the Ministry. Not those committees. They report to you.
Tell my colleague that, honestly speaking, you report to us, you don't report to the Ministry. I know, but it's hard to take decisions here, Chair. Thanks.
I'd like to thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The idea of the advisory committee of the fund is something that we have discussed and we definitely want to implement. We've already began engaging with the stakeholders who contribute to the Universal Service and Access Fund, because we do believe this is very important for them to, firstly for us to account to them on how we're spending the money, but also they have a whole lot of skills and expertise that we can tap into, and economies of scale, these big companies, Telkom for example, would be able to buy a switch or a router at a fraction of the cost if that USASA can get it at. So we should be working more closely with the operators. So this fund, we've discussed it with our ministry, and we are, advisory committee, we are setting it up, and it will be part of the new management of the fund. It is part of the plan. We're already implementing it. On the issue of MDDA, you'd like to know our opinion on whether it should merge or not. I do believe that in a converged environment, it's not good to have separate organizations doing different things. But sometimes separation of powers or what do they call it? Roles and separation of roles and responsibilities creates a more effective output. So economics, I can't remember, I wrote this exam, I forgot everything. But when you talk about different people focusing on different core businesses and you get more efficiency. For example, with NEMISA, we have such a huge area of overlap. But should we now merge or should we work together so that NEMISA supports us and we support NEMISA? But knowing without being territorial about turf, knowing that we do impact on each other and we overlap. MDDA, in my opinion, coming from 10 years ago, I understand it to be specifically set up to protect those constitutional issues around language and access to information, those rights issues in the Constitution. It does make sense now with the EC Act and a converged environment for USASA and the MDDA to work together or to even merge. The problem is that you've got them reporting to different ministries, one to the presidency and one to the ministry. So in a stakeholder roundtable that we had with ICASA, MDDA, and all the broadcasters this month, we expressed the opinion as the board that we can't solve this problem. This has to be discussed between the ministry and the presidency. It makes sense for us to merge, it makes sense for us to work together. It doesn't make sense to keep broadcasting out of and telecoms apart any longer. But also, I think the biggest marches that ever happened in Parliament have been around these issues of languages, in the debate around the telecommunications bill. So they're very emotive, and the public will focus on these issues. So tampering with the MDDA might cause problems. That needs to be looked at. The CEO will deal with the issues of the entrepreneurship model and the e-rate. But just on the 150,000 relocation, yes, honorable member, you are right. We finalized the issue after the audit tribunal completed their report on the matter. But on disciplinary reports, I think when they are resolved and finished, then we can report on it, and if you'd like us to do that, we will include it in our next annual report. But while the case is still ongoing, or it's under review or arbitration, we are not allowed to talk about it, so that it infringes on somebody's rights. So that's why we have not reported on the disability. But it's only one at the moment, there's no other. I'll hand over to the CEO.
Thanks, Sean. I think there were a number of issues raised. One is the application process, which I think Winnie alluded to, that as we review how the fund has been managed, one of the things that we're going to do is to make sure that there is more transparency around the fund. That will include the advisory committee, but also clear procedure as to how you access the fund. The criteria, who to submit the form to and all that, so that there is certainty and clarity on that. So that is part of the plan. And the issue of entrepreneurship and community, it's a bit tight, but the principle for us is we don't want to be seen going into communities, dropping computers, and living without making sure that those computers and the use of ICTs are integrated to the community or municipality plans, and there is sustainability and accountability. So that requires governing structure, sustainability plans, and integration with what's happening at the local level. Where the issue whether we should treat the funding as a loan or a grant, and whether we can recoup some of our investments, it's addressed in the act as to what this money can be used for, which is the grant rate, the subsidy. But there is an obligation on our part to ensure that there's accountability, there's proper reporting, and ultimately there is that dividend. I would call it social dividend, where we see communities benefiting and ICTs being used efficiently to improve the lives of people in those communities. Even if we are a fund, we don't operate like your typical private sector fund where we buy equity or we give loans and interest rates, and we don't operate like that. All what we do is to ensure that where there are access gaps on ICTs, we facilitate universal service through grants, but also we must make sure that there's a proper reporting and sustainability issue addressed to ensure that it's not just a waste of money or just throwing money into a problem. So we are aware of that. Now that requires that there are people who are skilled, competent to run this telecenter. And they need support, training, and also they need to make sure that they work with community organizations to ensure that the communities, they also benefit from this telecenter. And it's not just an entrepreneur just getting this thing from us and then using it for his own or her own
need without making sure that the community broadly benefits. Now, the issue of DOE and other partners that we work with would have loved to have that ability and capacity to go into a district or municipality and just move with addressing some of the actual gaps. But the reality is that you do need to integrate it with other stakeholders' plans. DOE, we can't do anything in serverless without coordinating with the Department of Education, because the idea is that they need to support that going forward. They need to make sure that the teacher uses the computer, and the teacher, the curriculum is integrated in the content of the computer, so that when we provide connectivity, it's not just access to general internet, but it is access to the relevant content in the school, so that the school can use ICT in a better way and in making sure that it meets its own objectives using ICT. So we are bound to work together with DOE and other stakeholders like government departments and local institutions. The issue of E-rate, it's a debate we are having with operators. You do have different costs from different operators. We know that in principle we all agree that E-rate would have to be 50% of a charge. But as to what charge you're referring to, you get different costs from different operators. But we are working together with ICASA and operators to come to a conclusion on what standard charge should we be talking about, and therefore 50% of that will then have to be applied. I think we talked about MDBA issue. The user and Pusano, there was a question around what is our view. Our view is clear that there is a need to deal with the underserviced areas in this country. We have in the past identified users as the key delivery mechanisms of access in the underserviced areas. There have been challenges. I think one of the problems that we have identified is that we did not integrate the current established operators with the user model. Now what you find is that you find established operators working in some cases against users, because there have to be issues of interconnection, there has to be issues of reselling and all that. Now, our view going forward is that as we move into a Pusano model, we need to promote a situation where even in our funding, we look at not just finding a user, but focus on anyone who is prepared to work with the users, work with Pusanos, but anyone who is able to provide access to telecommunication or broad ICT access in the underserviced area, we should be looking at funding those operators who are licensed, they work with users, and they require the least subsidy from our side, and they are in a position to accelerate universal service and access in those underserviced areas. So that's what we are looking at. We are working with users to prepare for the Pusano. They will require DOC and the ICASA to deal with the guidelines as to what needs to be submitted for Pusano. But in principle, we have agreed that we will implement the minister's directive. We will, through ICASA, match the licenses of users, and then we'll have to work out a configuration as to how are the different users going to relate to the provincial license holder. And that's what, those are the details that we'll be working with users and ICASA on. And yes, I think we'll come back on the legacy issues. We still think that there are legacy issues. The Act has never clear about the agency. There are issues around the remuneration
for example, of staff at the agency, we inherited a public service salary system, which we are still implementing, and we are reviewing whether it addresses our needs or not. There are issues relating to historically whether this agency has been properly budgeted for, or we just inherited an under-resourced agency, and this is perpetuating itself. Every time we need money, we are referred to a very low base, and those are the issues that we say we need to talk about. So we'll come back with the legacy issues going forward, and I'll leave it.
Honourable Member Costo, I was only joking when I said we don't report to you, because we do need your help around the issue of funding. Everybody reports to you. We report to the Minister, who reports to you. Ultimately, everyone. It gets paid to ICASA, and ICASA pays it over to the National Treasury. So the National Treasury then gives it to us through the DOC budget vote, which doesn't make sense, because the minister doesn't need to go and compete with other ministers for this money that's dedicated for the USAF fund. It should not come through the DOC budget vote. The process needs to be looked at. The operational funding of USASA then comes through the DOC budget board. The problem then is, if you do manage to access the USAF funds and you don't have money, operational money, you can't spend the funds. And historically we've seen that we've had all these rollovers because you don't have money, operational money, for petrol and travel and sanitation for the people to spend the money that sits in the funds. So it's, while we want the money to come to us from Treasury for the fund, at the same time, we don't want it to come if we don't have money to spend it. So the operational funding has to be sorted out. Or the second alternative is what we really like to request today to this committee, is that when we deal with next year, when the amendments to the Act come to your committee, can we please look at this issue around what we can and cannot do with the USAF fund? All we need is one simple thing in the amendment to say that the fund should pay for its own project management. If we can allocate a percentage or 10% or 15%, which is a good industry standard, so that even if USASA doesn't get the money, operational funding, the fund that's made up of contributions from operators should be self-sustainable. So we should be able to, we must be able to access project management or operational funding in from the fund itself. So the fund should pay for itself to implement itself, in other words, which is a simple thing, a simple amendment. I think that would go a long way towards alleviating the operational problems. USASA has to do certain things like research, policy advising, etc., with the USASA funding. The USAF, the EC Act is very clear. It's for subsidies and grants. But getting those subsidies and grants out costs money, and the USAF, the amendment should say that the fund should be allowed to pay for that within the fund. And then there will be no excuse once we have already submitted, we asked for emergency funding from Treasury, we got a big zero. So now the questions need to start being asked. We now have a strategy. We have business plans on the table. Now what is the problem? And we are fortunate we don't have to stand outside Parliament with placards. We can come to this committee and ask for your assistance, please. Now we have to deal with why is the money not flowing into this fund. From the operators are paying this money. And this money is for the industry. Treasury is keeping it. They need to give it to us so that we can spend it.
Thanks very much. Can we adjourn for 10 minutes? And then we reconvene at quarter to 12. Namisa, welcome. We're running a bit behind schedule, but we'll eat into your time.
Are you ready to present? I think if you can start talking to it, because we've read the report here. So welcome to your team and to the chairperson of the board. This is the board of directors then. Board of directors, welcome to you and to the rest of the people who come with you. Over to you. Much indeed. We're going to make this as tight as we possibly can. We were assured that all members received the annual report, so we will do it in a summary format. But just to say that this year under review, we are of course now really 8 months beyond this year, so much has happened at the MISA since this last year under review, but this year under review was very much a year of preparation, and the focus for the MISA was to prepare for its repositioning. That was actually, when the scene was set, actually, when the Shell about 2 years ago decided that because of the dynamics of the market and convergence, that NAMISA, that had been hitherto a school that just taught broadcasting, in a sense, and some of the media, had to cater for the broader ICT sector. And it needs to, in this very dynamic market environment, it has to look at its strategic thrust. And the new mandate was actually declared for us
an information. It's for us to become an advanced industry-led multimedia skills developer and content generator, and also to become electronic content development center for the South African government. So this is clearly just that. And in that context, we had to redefine our target market, our study program, our student source, and we had to build capacity to deal with the situation. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a second, because thereby hangs the tale as to how we were going to build that capacity when indeed we didn't get any development funds to do so. We were surviving on the MTFC budget cycle that's really only catered for increased operational costs in that stage of the elderly, sir. So we had to deal with that. So the concentration is therefore to bring ELISA to a state of readiness, and this needed considerable development work in the course of this particular financial year. And in this time also, we expanded our content hub to fulfill our mandate in that capacity. And then we had to develop a completely new program, which I'm going to come to in a second. What happened was that at the end of this year under review, right about the middle of September of this 2007 year, we started the new academic year of NMISA. And at that time, we registered 153 full-time students. This is apart from the learnership that we have and the academy that we have. And we had 11 full-time and 8 part-time trainers. So that number's also now gone up since then in this now calendar year. So the main challenge really was really succinct. It was to prepare for and establish a new NMISA that would offer a fully integrated study program and content-generating facility that addresses the needs of the fast-developing and ever-changing ICT sector. And in broad terms, meeting this challenge, we therefore had to develop the new study program to include a 12-month national certificate in radio production, an 18-month national certificate in TV production, a 3-year diploma in animation, which is very unique in this country, a 12-month foundation course in graphic design for multimedia. We moved away from the Malaysian Institute, which was costing us an arm and a leg, and we empowered our own people to teach this particular subject that we're now going to advance even more in this financial year, which in the new financial, which we'll talk about next year. We introduced a 12-month learnership in broadcast engineering, working with the National Association of Broadcasters and our MAPS CETA. And we also started a 12-month pilot academy in telecommunications, working with the second national operator in AOTEL. There again, there has been an advance in that capacity, which we'll talk about next time around. Thank you. Now, to do this, and I'm not going to go into great detail here because our CEO, Mr. Roy Mackay, will deal with this when he talks about our performance in the context of our objectives for the year, but we had to do the course development in the CR time. We had to develop new curricula, which we found to be an enormous task. New teaching materials and learning materials. We had to redevelop our resource center, normally called a library in the olden days. Appoint new full-time trainers and part-time supporting teams. Upgrade our technology. Establish our accreditation procedures and our recognition of our courses. Develop a quality management system. Plan human resources and effective organizational structure. So all these things we had to do to meet that challenge. So what we then did for ourselves, and Chair, you would have found this in our annual report, we very specifically put on the objectives for the year, and I will now ask Mr. Roy Mackay, who is our COO, to speak to how we met those objectives. But just to say this, and yes, Chair, I'm going to say something now because our CFO is a very modest lady, and I noticed in the slide that she prepared, she didn't say this. And for me, this was one of the biggest achievements in our year. We had an unqualified report from the AG. We didn't even have emphasis of matter from the AG. And Chair, to have achieved this under the circumstances of what we inherited was actually a minor miracle. I would like to give accolades to our Chair, who was magnificent in sitting before the group, although she hated it, and how she had to deal with that situation. She dealt with it very, very well indeed. And I would like to give accolades to the lady on my right, Karen Bezet, who is our new CFO, who had to pick up a can of worms and do miracles in a matter of 3 to 4 months. And of course, her team, and also our COO, Mr.
Mr. Boy Mackay, who helped considerably in that capacity. With that, I'll hand over to Mr. Mackay.
The performance against predetermined objectives for the period under review. Number one, with regards to governance, NELISA was relaunched with a new mandate, with the new strategy, and with a range of new courses as have been shown already. So the actual launch of NELISA was in July 2006. And subsequently, the exco for NEMISA was formalized, and appointments were made during this period. In terms of the management of training and development, with regards to course development, we had to develop the study programs, and in particular, we had to rework the curriculum and also develop teaching and learning materials. At the same time, we acquired a three-year animation curriculum from Algonquin College of Applied Arts and Technology in Canada. The reason being that this curriculum is one of the leading curricula internationally and accounts for a large number of people that are graduates that are out there in the industry that are working for some of the biggest studios internationally. We also, during this period, established both the industry and the curriculum advisory bodies. The industry advisory body helps the institution with gathering market intelligence and also advising on directions to be taken in terms of training and development, while the curriculum advisory body looks in detail on the relevance of curricula and whether the curricula meets the needs of the industry. Continuing on with course development, we did conduct training for people with disabilities, and this was a partnership with the Office of the State, OSGP, and we went on to also run a 10-week animation masterclass with Algonquin, in fact, the animation industry in the country is primarily short-form animation industry. What we were doing with acquiring the curriculum from Algonquin was to start a tradition of long-form animation. And hence the program, 3-year program. But at the same time, what we did is that in terms of the short-form, it's mainly people that work in advertising who do a bit of commercials. So what we tried to do with this masterclass was to target those people and begin to provide them with training that would extend the skills to long-form animation. We also started a partnership with an industry body called ARTI, where we trained animation producers. During this period, 10 short films were produced. We finalized the program with Creative Multimedia, with Multimedia University of Malaysia, where over the years they had, NEMIS had been running the Creative Multimedia program on the basis of their curriculum. And during this period, we managed to build enough capacity to be able to run our own program. So that program, as it was run on the basis of the MMU curriculum, has since been discontinued. We also conducted training for SABC staff on the fundamentals of high-definition television. This is an ongoing partnership with the SABC to train their staff. In terms of accreditation, a number of documents had to be put together. So during this period, things like the curriculum that was being developed and the employment of full-time staff and development of quality management systems, all these things are important in terms of the submissions that needs to happen for accreditation. So during this period, we continued to compile all the necessary evidence, which has since been supported to the relevant authorities. In terms of quality assurance, We did review and develop our processes and systems to be able to support our operations and to be able to speak to the framework of a proper quality management system. And this system, we have been working with the South African Quality Institute to develop, and it's near completion. With regards to capacity building, senior managers were appointed, several senior managers were appointed to strengthen the team so that it could be able to support the implementation of the strategy. But also, we also acquired a few more equipment to support the existing and new programs that had been put in place. With regards to student affairs, we continued to look into programs and services that, that would support training excellence. And the strategy is in place in terms of what needs to happen where certain services have are not available internally, and we are working on relationships with some of the institutions around Johannesburg to be able to support our training our students. With regards to content development, we have developed a digital content strategy that speaks to part of our mandate in terms of becoming the content hub for South African government. And we have done quite a bit in terms of working with certain government departments, in the main the DOC, and we also are continuing to work with the Department of Education and the Department of Health to assist in developing content. And during this time also, we expanded and looked broadly in terms of the broadcasting sector, and we solicited some work and we were successful in one or two other cases. That will be all for you.
Now I hand over to our CFO, Ms. Karnvik.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Thank you for the opportunity of presenting the financial section of the annual report. The slide that we've got up there is an abridged version of the auditor's report, and basically what I'd like to state is that we did receive an unqualified audit for the financial year ending March 2007. Two issues that were raised, however, related to an agreement exercise that was not carried out in terms of the fixed assets at financial year end, and the second issue related to intangible assets that was classified under computer equipment as opposed to intangible assets. And we have undertaken to correct these issues in the current financial year. The next slide that we have on the board relates to the financial position for the year, and I'm going to just very, very briefly run through these, especially the figures for the current year. Total assets for the company basically consisted of 25.6 million rand, and this was largely constituted by 14.8 million rand in cash and cash equivalents. The book value of assets amounted 7.7 million rand, and trade and other receivables is basically 2.9 million rand for the financial year. Net assets and liabilities were made up primarily of accumulated surplus of 5.6 million, long-term liabilities of 1.3 million. We also had unspent conditional project funds of 12.6 million rand, and trade and other payables made up the balance amounting to about 5.6 million rand. Statement of financial performance for the financial year ending March 2007. We received just over 19 million rand in terms of government grants. Other income amounted to 2 million rand. Interest received amounted to 672,000 rand for the year, giving us total income of 21 million rand. Our expenditure, however, amounted to 23 million rand, which resulted in a net deficit for the year of 1.230 million rand. I must point out that this figure was in actual fact influenced by prior year collections, and we have shown on a slide which will subsequently come to, that this amounted to about 1.6 million rand. The statement of changes in net assets for the year basically reflects our net deficit for the year of 1.2 million rand. And we can here see that our balance at the end of the financial year was 5.655 million rand. The corrections to prior year figures amounted to 1.6 million rand, and these mainly related to errors or adjustments that were required in terms of the lease agreements that were not disclosed as financial leases in prior years. And in addition to this, operating expenses were not correctly straight-lined in terms of the IAS 17/AC 105 statement. The prior year depreciation was also incorrectly adjusted, and we needed to put an adjustment through for this. This amounted to the prior year adjustment amounting to 2.7 million rand at the end of the year. Next slide basically relates to our start establishment as a financial year end. The first graph basically indicates the management employees by management level, and the second slide looks at employees by gender classification as breaking down the males and females. Employees by job level category shown on the third graph on the presentation. A slide which I would actually like to refer to in the annual report, which is also important for us just to highlight and show on, is actually on page 17 in the annual report, and that relates to the racial breakdown of the employees in the company. And from that we can actually see that when you say in actual fact employees more females than males, so we've actually achieved top wins in that regard.
Okay, we didn't put one in on age, because my age would have skewed the whole thing.
That basically concludes my presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the end of our...
Thanks for the very tight presentation. And this is a question.
Chairperson, I'm not trying to sound negative, but you know, I find it interesting when somebody comes and celebrates, and I understand from where they come from, very often when they say he didn't get a qualified audit report. That's what you're supposed to do. That's supposed to be your normal operation. That's why we train you to do a particular job. Like Jake White and the Springboks winning the World Cup, we paid them enough money to buy a farm every month to win the World Cup. So we shouldn't celebrate about that. I don't celebrate when I get my salary on the 15th, because I work hard to get it. Chairperson, come back, you know, some of those courses is very interesting that you're offering, and maybe just to make it available particularly to members of parliament. They might be interested, and particularly in a part-time basis, to take it up. And even not just taking it up, will be interesting to see what it is that we can try and circulate amongst our constituencies and ask them to take it up. Because we represent people from across the length and breadth of the country. But I'm not sure if any of my constituency has enrolled in any of those programs. And yes, I sit and say, yes, it's a good program. So how come they don't take that up? The second point that I think you've raised earlier this year around ISA. I think taking up that facilities and a whole host of things, I'm not exactly sure all the details that you've raised here, but I think we should have also raised the DOC, but nobody seems to report him on that. And I don't necessarily expect ISA to give a detailed report. But I think at that time, somehow they went off the radar screen, and that's not ISA. And I think the NISA has taken up some of the content of the courses. Maybe because, well, I'm not exactly sure what, who has taken up what, and I think there's a revival of ISA there. Seems to be a month or 3 years ago, a revival of ISA, whether the minister is in the position to report on that, even not the finest detail. But I think, like I said earlier, the minister, QSATA, who are at a time in a very similar position. You know, levels of turnover, instability, a whole host of things happening. I'm really glad, and I hope that as a committee we can play a positive role to keep them on a steady, progressive road that they have embarked on. The failure of the USASA and the MISA once it started with one child and said, what did I contribute to the success, or what did I contribute to the non-success of that? And from our side, I think that we will do our best to make sure that they get the necessary funding, support, and stability. And hopefully nobody will post from NOMISA as they try to rebuild themselves. Thank you, sir.
You are essentially a teaching and learning organization. Now, what's your recruitment strategy for students? I got a sense when I met Mr. Leclerc a few weeks ago that you subsidize your students to quite an extensive scale. What's the return from that? I mean, if we're using public funds or money that's generated from the industry together with the government, we give a free bursary plus accommodation, how are we holding those people to some kind of contractual obligation afterwards? Is they pay back to service in a government institution for a period of time? Or is it just giving them the study grant, and then tomorrow all the wealthy industry players just take them away? So what's the public benefit to that? What's the racial profile of the students? And what's the prospect for this thing, becoming a much larger institute? Because my sense is there's a great need for people out there, the younger graduates or the people with skills. And how can we expand this organization into much more diversity?
Thank you. On the report, they only highlighted the intake of 153, but I would like to know how many graduated in the field. On page 33 of your report, as per the conditional project fund, the figure was not spent. If you could explain this, thank you.
I don't the one shot has been already taken by my senior citizen. The second one shares around the issue I raised with the issue of disciplinary measures within the again, I'll apologize due to some pressures. I did go to the report, but in a very speedy way. Not in such a way that I could pick up something in fine or written in a white ink. So I could not be able to pick it up and so on. But I was also going to be interested to just to know what is the surround? What is an issue around the deficit of 1.2? Just to have some understanding around that particular matter and so on. And also the issue on page 47, talking about the disputed payment by the former security service contractor. What's an issue around that particular matter, so that one can understand what it's happening.
Thank you very much. Did you get another question?
Shall we proceed?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'll deal with some of these, and maybe I have one or two other, I'm not quite sure. No doubt. I mean, we mustn't have a qualified. I think the point I was trying to make is that I was going to get back to my colleagues. that what we were faced with as a new team was an enormous thing. And to have done it in a short space of time was actually amazing. That's what I'm saying. You'll get another unqualified one. The course.
I'll tell you why he's raising that. This year, a lot of government departments or agencies come and say, this year we call it unqualified.
Yes.
As we reflect the remark, well, it is.
Sure. Now we take the point.
As a general rule, you should be striving towards unqualified or what? And the exception should be a qualification.
Yeah.
The rate at which, I mean, across the board, the rate at which we're going, it's like you're doing a great favor to the nation if you're an unqualified report. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The culture is wrong.
Sure. Like any journey, you get a taxi. Chair, then the issue this is a big challenge for us to get the identity and the penetration of what we do, you know, right into all the parts of the country. It's not going to happen in 1 year. We've got a marketing budget. We spend the money off, combined with the issue of how we recruit. We use print media and radio, and community radio in particular, to try and reach those outlying areas that the Honourable Member is referring to. And it's building up. If you look at our profile of students from the provinces, which used to be very much Gauteng-based, and it was supposed to be outlying areas, and there never was before our time, actually. But we are now, we're taking the Gauteng figure down to about 62%. And we have a representation in every single province of the country, and we're going to build on that. So as we build and as we are able to develop our communications program and have more and more funds, we will increase that. But we're very much aware of that, and we're working hard at that one. I can't answer for ISKA, unfortunately. They're a separate portfolio organization, and they have, and I understand, a new plan. I don't know whether the DOC wants to comment on that. I see they are here. The facility, the multimedia facility that is there, was created some years ago when there was still the hope of launching the EduNet program. And we were going to develop multimedia material there and uplink and downlink from there to the school and to the networks. We've been told that we can make use of that facility. We haven't yet done so because we don't have the money. So it is there, but we want to get to it, and we will get to it. That's all I can say at this time. As far as the rest of the ISA program is concerned, Chair, I think the DOC might like to comment on that just now. Chair, yes. Up to when the new NAMISA was born, the raison d'etre for NAMISA originally was to cater for particularly the underprivileged people in the rural areas, notably young black women. And the idea was to bring them into the broadcasting industry because they didn't have the opportunity to do so, and then for them to be subsidized 100%. So NAMISA always had a 100% subsidy program. When we launched the new NAMISA and we were given a far broader mandate, our profile has changed. And by virtue of our old pay program and the needs in the marketplace out there. And in this year under review was the first year where we actually planned to have paid students. And we plan in that year, particularly here, to have 60% of our full-time people paying and 40% being supported. And that support comes largely through bursaries, which is an indirect cost, it's not a direct cost, and accommodation at the store supply. And for that, we're going to have research programs and internship programs for those people when they qualify. So then, of course, over and above this, and I'll just add that to the question, is that in terms of our development and our mandate, which is so broad and so far more all-embracing, we have to also generate other revenue ourselves and not just rely on the government funding that we get. Because in a normal situation, if a company wants to relaunch itself and reposition to the marketplace, it goes to the market to get money to do so, and there's a development budget. We've never had that. So this year, which is now the year after the year of review, we had hoped, in fact, to generate an order of about 10, 11 million rand. I don't think we're going to make it, but we'll probably bring in about 7 to 8 million, which is money over and above the NGF funds that we get from government. The question about the 153 people, they haven't graduated yet. That is the number that started at the end of the year under review. So the answer to your question will come at the end of this year.
and we'll be able then to answer your question, I'll remember. There are three finance type questions. I'll hand those to Corin. Sorry, the racial profile actually mirrors the national profile.
If I can just explain the unspent condition of project funds, this is basically money that has been received for projects that is ongoing and will actually be incurred in the next financial year. That's what we mean by unspent condition of funds. I think the other question related to the deficit for the year. If I can possibly refer you to page 35 in the annual report. The accumulated deficit for the financial year is actually a reflection of the prior year adjustments that have come through. And on page 35, if you have a look against the notes 15, you'll see there was a 4.332 million rand that went through for the period up to 31 March 2005. And then for the previous financial year, we had another adjustment of 1.6 million rand. And appropriately through those two adjustments, this resulted in the net deficit that has gone through for this year.
Thank you, Chair. Can I come back to a broader matter that you raised, which is very much under review right now? And although we're now talking at this time, and this report goes back to the other financial year, it's very relevant. What you said just now. And we've had these discussions with the shareholder already, and the last bilateral meeting with the minister was agreed that we would sit as a team with the DOC as a shareholder and decide where are we going to take this place? Because at the moment we're growing exponentially. And if you look at our new mandate, which is defined, then it goes, yes, we are essentially a training institution. However, we have other responsibilities, social responsibilities. We've got to contribute to the government's plan of action. That means an awful lot. To become the government's content development agency means an awful lot. To deal with all of those skills needs out in the marketplace, we can't do so only by teaching people full-time on the premises. We've actually got to go to the workplace. And if you look at the plans that we have right now, which we report on next year, right now we are busy developing, I think, 14 strategic alliances in order to cater for those market skills needs that go beyond what we can do on the premises. Because the technological development is so far at the blink of an eye. There are new skills needed today. Every time a new system comes through a particular player in the market, there are new skills needed. So we've got to keep touch with the market. We've got to train the people to prepare them for the market, and we're going to run short courses to do that on a regular basis. And this means that our mandate grows all the time. Now, there are numerous questions to be asked here, but obviously the one very obvious one is funding. Because we can only generate funds at a certain pace. And we need to invest for the growth ahead of time. So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation we're finding ourselves in right now, which we'll report on next year. But I'm just addressing what you raised now. We will be having a workshop with the shareholders soon. In fact, we're having the first workshop with the management in the next 10 days or so to set the scene before at a senior level we meet with the director general and say where does the shareholder want us to take the meeting.
See, I want to, there are two things I want to raise. The one is, just think of a Free Berkeley. I mean, there are literally thousands of students in university who struggle month to month to get excluded eventually. Good students, but who get excluded because they're unable to pay the fee or meet their obligations. Now, we are giving somebody a Free Berkeley. Blunt accommodation, hospital facility, and I guess they come with the meals and everything. It's a total package. What's the return to the state? Why should some father, 153 or 50 of them, get handpicked somehow or the other with the criteria not clear to me at least? How do you select 50 students? Give them a total package, young girl or boy, go and study. This is for you, it's a gift for you. What does the state get in return? And how do we select them at the expense of thousands of others who really struggle? So I want to get the principle of fairness, openness and transparency about the selection procedure. And there must be some, like a teacher in the old days, you got a 3-year teacher course, the state paid your fees, but it means you had to be in the employ of the state for 3 years. If you resign, you have to repay that money. But you have to be in the employ of the state. Not a private teaching, a school or something of that sort. Once you finish your 3-year contract, you want to go to a private school, that's fine. But you have paid that something for the benefit that you got from public funds. That's the first thing. The second thing is that, you see, how much are we servicing the private sector? We have a critical skilled deficit in existing state electronic communications related agencies. Right? Specifically, class of people is battling to get here, right? Because this one, that one. Everybody is battling. We don't have young talent there, engineers, electronic specialists, I don't know, all the technical people. Again, is our core mandate to train young people to put that into existing state related entities? So, Centex. I mean, do we have, I don't know, adequate supply of signal technicians? I don't know. Where are they going to come from? Now, should we be focusing on that, on training core skills and talent, and producing talent, to support existing? Or are we just training, and then the private sector picks them up, and they go away for, well, then what's the point of this exercise? Then they must go to an ordinary university or sector course to get their skills. Why are we creating a special institution? I'd like to get clarity on that.
Okay, I this is very much on the table in the debate we're having, we will be having with the shareholder in the next few weeks. Originally, the raison d'etre, the reason for why the state is investing in this institution was, as I said, there was a gap in the broadcasting sector, white dominated, male dominated, and old age dominated. The laws were old, they had to revise the laws and all that sort of thing. And that's how the MISA started. Then you had this explosion of technology and convergence of technologies, and the DOC, which was endorsed by the cabinet. Then you have the new strategic objectives that say, and then MISA must remain. Because if this country is going to stay ahead of what is happening in the ICT sector, and we're going to be competitive and compete with the world out there, which is what it's all about, the state has to continue to intervene to create new skills needs that are growing day by day. Now, I'm just giving you the strategic level we were given. That's a given. We're saying now, asking the same questions as you were raising, Chair. Where do you draw the line? Do you now say you're trained for the state? Or do you say you've got to, no, there's so much of greater need. I just have to do something else. And I'm going to come to something in a minute. I don't know if Professor Priscilla is still here. No, he's left. But I will allude to that since you raised this. Or do you privatize on this? Let the private sector come in and actually put money in. Not just help here and there, whatever. These are all the questions we're raising right now. Now, this is being addressed, in all fairness, by government. And at the President's last advisory council meeting, the notion of corporate schools, which is private-funded schools, was endorsed. The Eastfield Council was firmly established. The working group that's going to be the technical group that sees the Eastfield Council was established. Professor Mitchell is in fact the chairperson. He was sitting here just now. And the idea of an ICT university that was born in the state president's address in 2002 is now being taken forward. And Dr. Andresso, the DDG at DOC, has actually been asked by the Minister to develop a model. So all these things are being looked at right now. And the questions that you're raising are being posed. Not just as far as Nisa's concerned, but also as far as Morocco is concerned, as far as East is concerned, the new possible university, the linkages with country institutes. But let me just hasten to say that in our own research and intervention with the market, the tertiary institutions right now are not providing to the ICT sector in the manner that it should. It's highly academic, it's not always that relevant, and it's, there's just no interaction. And we picked this up in our research, Dr. Vesa picked up in his research,
and other studies were done by the ITEC bacteria. So these are all things we have to now look at very, very seriously. So on the table right now is, at world government level, at international advisory council level, at our level we're dealing with the market, and with the interventions that we have, is a total review to look at all these issues that we've been raising here today. And this is happening right now. It's not going to happen in the next 3 years. We need to have clarity by the first quarter of next year.
Jefferson, I'm sure, you know, this program is run up with the skill shortage that's been identified by the state. The only problem is, because people come on their own and apply, they're not necessarily coming from employment. Do we see people being placed in a work environment the moment they're done? Or do we see them, they're out on their own? We've seen something similar, and this is my concern, we've seen something similar in terms of ISA. By the way, the 50-50 is just a myth in South Africa, you know, in terms of gender representation, should be 53%. So that's the percentage of women to men in the country. We want to be fair, at least to that. Understanding where we come from, what we need to do. We don't necessarily see employers queuing up to take up people. Sure, there is a take up, but I don't necessarily see them queuing up. Ideally, we'd like to see some of those, particularly where there's no big take up, is to come back as part-time trainers. You know, your question, how do we derive some benefit out of a fully funded student, a fully funded learner, in some way, even if we have a placement kind of approach to say to the employer, here's somebody fully trained, he can come and work for you, but I want 2 hours or hour a day to come back as a part-time trainer, you know, it's the first year or two. That will be ideal. Like I said, obviously the concern is that it's not a lot of them. Some of the employees we've picked up, in terms of employment equity, they take this young black learner, just completed, highly qualified, well-trained, and just all of that, and then misplace them. Not in the discipline they've been trained, but like in terms of being a senior and highly placed pen pusher, being an admin and all of that, and yet he sits with a particular diploma, with a particular degree. So don't see the actual training, the benefit of that coming through. So with this, let me call it a white-owned company, needs to have so many blacks through. So you'll take the person from this young man, doesn't see the benefit of starting it at the bottom and working his way up. So it's all the benefit that goes with it. There's good money and all of that. Because also that, there is that play. But I believe Numisa has a play. Until such time, you shouldn't flag the place of delivery, but rather increase the place of delivery. Are you competitive? You do it for the country, the private sector will do it for themselves.
I'd like to respond to that. Now, let's just remember now, we're moving out of the year under review. Okay? Because from the year review is a preparation year, getting ready for the new NUMISA, the actual new NUMISA, which only started in this financial year, which you're not reporting on right now. I'd like to ask where to put that slide on the board if you can get to it, where the courses that we run right now. So, taking cognizance of what the honourable members have said, and it's absolutely spot on. No, we're not going to be an employment agency, that we can't be. But what we've got to do is provide a conducive environment within which people can be placed effectively, and not as long as, you know, doing the paperwork, but being professional. So we're talking to the current program, working to try and find this work. But I'll give you two examples. The broadcasting engineering learnership we're starting now are learnerships where students actually will spend 70% of their time being trained in the workplace. And then from their work, they move into internships. Okay? That we're really having place in this new financial year. The same applies to the Telecoms Academy with a pilot of only 14 persons, which we're now going to develop as a 20-person full-time, one-year Telecoms Academy for postgraduates starting February next year, and a three-year diploma where we're going to follow the same procedure of learnerships, internships, and workplace skills development. Our multimedia students this year, I'm told by our senior lecturer there, have all been offered jobs already. this year, which we'll report to you next year when we come here. And the same applies to our TV people. There are already some of those who are working at that time at the SABC and the radio people. We're working very closely with the National Association of Broadcasters to do exactly what the honourable members just said, is to feed through into the system and to react directly to the skills needs out there and actually get people involved in the industry. Now, since this year under review, much has already happened, which we'll report to you next year. But I think what we'll do, because it's such an important thing, which we'll obviously do, Chair, that when we've had our workshop about the NISA going forward, we'll obviously report to the committee in the interim as to how these things are developing, the things that are arriving in the discussions here. Because we can't wait and talk year back all the time. The market is too dynamic, the needs are so great that we need to, I think, have a more constant feed into the committee to demonstrate to you what we're doing about these things and what is actually happening.
Let's wait for the last question. Shimka? Sherry?
Thank you, sir. Your Russian category slide Russian category that is in page 17 in your report. Sorry, Chief. I still have a slide for that particular one, if I could possibly. It's in the annual report. Yes. No. I don't know how it works. Just I might think that the problem, yet there's no problem. So can you go through with me? Tell me if I'm right. Your executive management, you've got under black, you've got one male, and then your total is one. You don't have a female. Your total is one. Is that right? So that's how it goes. Now, let's go to specialized skills. You've got two males and a black. You've got two females, and your total is four. Then you go to your Asian. You've got male, you've got zero there. Is that what it shows to your own slide?
Sorry, Chief, if I can just respond to that. There is an actual fact. Typographical errors on that line, specifically on that line. Under Asian males, that should be one. There are no females, and the total should be one. And moving across to colored, the males are one, the females should be zero, and the total is one.
I don't know. Now, let's go to, it's fine. Now, there's the same error. That's not the only, Now then, should we believe that then this graph that you are showing here does represent what is written here? Is this graph accurate? How are we going to believe that the graph is accurate? Because the percentages and the figures here, they don't coordinate.
Sorry, Chief, I can just respond to that. The graph itself is accurate. The figures, this line under specialized skills has those typographical errors, and those errors have incurred in the grand totals as well. But that does not influence the graph itself. And what we can do is we will circulate an adjusted graph, Chair.
Yeah,
I
was... you see, it could have been good if we have been told that in advance so that we don't have to ask questions and tell us that there are errors in this report, and then later on we'll be, you see, so that raises the question, you know. So thank you.
Okay.
That's noted. I think what you should do is just send it to the committee secretaries and update it sort of more accurately, graphs and figures. Can I say, suggest this matter, the clerk, that we, in the course of the new year, very early in the new year, we have to look at it from a Soviet point of view. Can we have a round table? Not a hearing, and not where you come into the court. For us to have a serious discussion about where the NISA is going. We'd like to hear the different ideas that people have, etc. You see, earlier on we had USATA. Now we know, for example, that the tele centers and whatever they have set up, there's a critical shortage of skilled people to run those centers. Now, who's training them? Because yet one arm of government, another arm of government, the minister has another agency of government. Teachers are talking teachers. And those poor chefs and percent are betting, how are they going to get the centers to run? Where do we get the skilled trade for it? Some of them are basic management, basic enterprise things. Who trains them? They don't have that. Have you spoken to each other? Can we get programs going? So I think those are the kinds of things. I heard the minister telling me the other day, she was chatting as we were walking along, something about called Decatur. I don't understand what is Decatur, but I just hear the step, E-E-E, so it's a fancy name. Who trains the Decatur? Are we creating another substructure to look at Decatur? I mean, those are the kinds of things. I really want to understand where are we going. My sense is that we not in the department as a whole, multiple agencies are there, we're not getting the right kind of coordination. That's a government responsibility. We're not getting the right kind of coordination. So people are doing good things there. Some of them are struggling about it. But we are really not sitting down and saying, look, how can we get the best value for money? How can we coordinate our activities so that we get to form a superior partnership within the departmental mechanism? So I would suggest that we'll, from a programming point of view, we'll look at something earlier in the year. I can't say up front now when, but we want to have an open discussion about where we're going. Privatizing might be one model. Keeping it as it is might be another model. Refocusing it, I mean, those are the kind of questions that we will have to begin to look at much more carefully. I hope you're not going to be making decisions right then. I know that you can't run an academic program, you need certainty. So clearly for 2008, you will do what you are doing already. You can't reverse that. You have to roll out the program, you put students there, you will complete their courses, etc. But before we start going, doing a whole lot of other new courses and 3-4 year courses and all that, you've got long-term commitments or medium-term commitments. You must get certainty about what the institution is about. That is my, as a newcomer, that's my view. And I think I'm fortunate because I have a strong educational background. That's why I'm asking very specific educational questions. Otherwise, we develop something is not really what we wanted. Of course, there's always value in education, but it's not what we want. Randy, last comment, and I want to close now.
Jefferson, there's a buzzword called 2010. You start in a message here. Do they have a role in 2010? And what is that role?
Can we keep this for the round table? Well, that's a big issue. We're going to be calling up. I don't sorry to cut you short. What we did decide even with the others is that we want to call all of them. And they must tell us the state of readiness for 2010. What is each little thing supposed to be doing? CASA, Centec, this one, that one. And how do we begin to tie things up? So you might want to, I mean, that's going to be another question for you. So what's your specific contribution to what you don't have to answer now. I think it's a big issue. And we leave that also because that's going to be one of the big things we want to take up next year also.
Chicken, as I said, we sincerely hope that the workshop with the DSC I alluded to just now, both workshops should have been completed before Christmas so that we can meet your request early in the year.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I know you're doing very good work. We can see that. I mean, we can see the work that you're doing. Keep up the good work, especially in getting the focus right. Thanks also for the clean order that we have important for the short term Q&A. And hopefully that we can spend a bit more time. But in the course of this year, I'm going to be coming to the institution. I've made this promise. I want to come and see the center. Thank you very much to the members, the visitors, and to the kids in here. Have a nice weekend. And,
this did bring the pressure off my back. I think I've been working hard, isn't it? But I started working, so thank you very much for that. See you for next year. We'll see you for next year.